one of the things that is an important element of the women's suffrage movement that I think that is often forgotten is that there were many contradictions about the movement. For example, even though we tend to look at a lot of activity that happened in the eastern portion of the United States, it was actually the states out west that tended to give women the right to vote before the eastern parts of the state. And my theory about that really is that much in the same way as the rural areas of upper New York State that I write about in my book were more egalitarian, this is the same type of thing that you see in the states of the western United States in the latter part of the 19th century. The conditions of that pioneering life were such that it took the contributions of both men and women equally in order to survive. And I think that is a little bit of a surprise when you look at the suffrage movement and you realize that it wasn't necessarily the sophisticated Eastern establishment that granted women the right to vote, but more the backward, if you will, Western states that were there first. And I think that really hinges on the importance of this idea of egalitarianism and equality between the genders that existed in those pioneering cultures, much in the same way that it existed in the agricultural-oriented communities of upstate New York. Another interesting contradiction, too, is that while many of the strategies of the anti-suffragists tended to use arguments based on femininity, that it was not a feminine activity to clamor for the vote, the suffragists that I include in my book actually used femininity as a civic tool in order to fight for the right to vote, and they really did it brilliantly. And I think it's a testament to the fact that we don't need to neutralize our gender in order to show that we have validity and power. And I know that as a woman of the 21st century now, I feel absolutely filled with delight when I see young girls and women getting ahead in education and careers and business by actually celebrating their beautiful femininity instead of trying to neutralize it in order to prove some sort of parity with men and get ahead that way. I don't believe society needs to be that way. And when I see women actually moving forward in their lives and their work, embracing that very special segment of gender gifts, I really feel very, very happy about that. But I think in closing on that topic, just the idea that we needn't look at the women's suffrage movement as a monolithic movement. It was a varied movement. It was made up of many different women of all walks of life. It went through many different stages. And it was also a movement that from its beginnings was wedded very closely with the slavery movement. And interestingly, many of the suffragists who by the time of the Civil War had organized effectively to work on behalf of women's suffrage actually set aside their own suffrage agenda to work on behalf of the black slave and to work for citizenship and voting rights for black slaves after the Civil War, thinking that they too would be given enfranchisement and political rights on the heels of what was happening with the improvements in progress in the black culture. And when this did not happen, there was a great backlash in American history. And it's a very difficult thing as a suffrage historian, for example, to read some of the writings and the rhetoric that came out of the the mouths of Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton during this post-Civil War period, because they were very angry. They had been passed over, and they really thought that their own agenda of women's suffrage would be tacked on to the progress that was being made with Black Americans. And when this did not happen, there was a period of almost a decade of some very racist rhetoric and very nativist-oriented backlash on the part of some of the leaders of the women's suffrage movement, Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton included. And it's very hard to read that now. And that dissipated, certainly, by the 1890s, when the various factions of the women's suffrage movement did effectively come together and work in a united fashion, broaden their coalition by including immigrant women and young factory women of some of the mills and industries in the Northeast, and society women and wealthy women from Washington, D.C. And as the movement became more broad in its appeal, it became more successful. And truly, one of the architects of the success of the women's suffrage movement, and especially in the approval of the 19th Amendment, was Carrie Chapman Catt, who understood and put into what she calls her winning plan. She understood the importance of not gaining suffrage for women on a state-by-state basis, but to go straight for an approval of a federal amendment. And once that stance and strategy was articulated and the coalitions were broadened to include sectors of women from all walks of life, that is when the movement really took off by the early 1900s and 1910s, and women were able to be successful.